Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr, and you are listening to Fiber Talk, the twice-weekly podcast for people who play with needles and stab ground cloth and make beautiful art on top of it. And no Christine this week, but we have with us Kimberly Ann Carter of Kimberly Ann Needlepoint. Hi, Kimberly.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Hey, thanks for joining us. So, okay. Must have been a big meeting for the company name then, right?
Oh, yeah, big meeting.
Yeah.
My sister had a handbag line, and she used her first and middle name, and so that kind of inspired me. So
there we go.
A little nod to my sister.
There we go. Yeah. Hey, nobody will copy your name, so that'll work.
That's true.
Yep. So this, I'm most interested in doing the research here. Painting at Parsons, art history at Portland, and interior design at Scottsdale. Holy smokes.
Yes.
You tried them all.
I know. Yeah. Well, Parsons was their summer program. So when I was actually in high school, my junior year summer, my sister's artistic as well. It was her idea while she was in college. And so my dad was like, sure, you and your sister could go. So I went and got to spend a summer in New York and took the Parsons class. And then that was more concentrated on drawing, but it was just a great experience to go explore New York City at 17 years old. So my dad understood us very well, I know. So, but then in college, I decided, oh, I'd like to go do that again, but be more focused on painting because I wanted to learn painting better. And so I went out and did that by myself in college, and it was an awesome experience. And it really took me in the direction that I am now for my career. So
you did Parsons twice then?
Yeah, and it's just their summer. They have opened out summer programs, but you get the Parsons instructors. So you get trained artists teaching you, and just really influential, huge part of just developing me as an artist myself. So that was just an awesome experience. And then
My money says you got a whole lot more out of it the second time.
I did.
Absolutely. Yeah, I bet you did.
Yeah. I actually had the instructor my sister had when we went that first time.
Oh.
And I can't remember the artist's name, the instructor, but she really just helped push you as a painter and jumped right into the painting. So, it was great.
Pretty intensive program.
Yes. Like Monday through Friday, all day long, you're painting for a whole month.
Oh, my word, really?
Yeah, I'm right-handed. I discovered I could start painting with my left hand because my arm just got so exhausted that I was like, I can't go anymore with this hand. I got to pick up the other hand. So, yeah, but it was great. It was crash course, I guess.
I can see why your dad let you go. He knew there was no way you were going to get in trouble.
Yeah, I know. You're so tired at the end of the day. Yeah. So,
They'll be safe. Great. They aren't going far.
Yeah. In New York, I haven't been to New York in a while, but it was really safe back then too, that I felt really comfortable the part of Manhattan we were in. So it was good. Good. Yeah.
The dad wise beyond his years. Yes.
Uh-huh. Yes. I have a great father.
That's great. So, yeah. That's great. Okay. And then now I don't know many people with an art history who studied art history, but you know, generally that's viewed as, what are you going to do with that for a career? And you've obviously found a way to make that work. So does your art in high school, you just kept going with that then?
Yeah, well, when I went into college, I actually had a studio fine arts major. And then as I started, I had to take art history. And as I got into it, I was like, gosh, I really enjoy this because the art history allows you to learn the history of cultures, historical things that have happened in a country through their art. And so I just found it fascinating. So I kind of got sucked into that. And I just decided, you know, I'm going to go in this direction with my degree. And so I just really focused on all the art history courses. And so when I got done with my bachelor's degree, when I got out, and then this goes into the interior design, I graduated with my bachelor's in 06. And so I had a girlfriend that lived down in Scottsdale, Arizona. So I was like, you know, I'm just going to move down there and kind of figure out what I want to do. And we had a really good close family friend who's an interior designer. And so I just called her up and I was like, can I like intern with you? And just kind of see, well, maybe this is something I'd like to do. And so she's like, sure. So I got a job working at Calico Corners. It's like a fabric store. So I got to learn a lot about like fabric, drapery, and so forth. And then I worked with her. And then I decided, well, I need to go get a certification for interior design. So I just went over to Scottsdale Community College, and it was like a 3-year degree. And so I went and did that. And when I graduated, the economy crashed. So I could not find a job.
Excellent.
Yeah. And that's when my husband and I had reconnected, because we knew each other from, we know each other all the way back to grade school. So we like reconnected, and then right away we're like, we need to get married. What are we doing? So we got married, and I just started doing administrative work because that's all I could find. So I did that for about 4 or 5 years. And then when we got pregnant with my son, I knew I wanted to be a stay-at-home mom. And so, but I wanted to do something creative on the side, because it's just not my nature to just ignore my creativity, that I have to get that energy out. And so I fell back onto needlepointing. And just started out my line. But, you know, a big influence to my needlepointing was my mom taught me when I was in high school. And I just saw her doing it. I was like, what is this? And she's like, needlepointing. I go, show me. And she showed me. And so, you know, how expensive the canvases are for me being a creative person. I was like, well, gosh, I could do that. I can create something. Why do I need to go pay X, you know, especially as a young kid. And I only had so much allowance. So I just picked up literally a Sharpie marker and designed my own canvas with a black Sharpie. That's how I began. And then part of my education, I jumped around a lot throughout my bachelor's degree. But I started down in Santa Barbara because my sister was down there. And I actually worked for Peter Crawford, and he used to own his shop, The Red Thread, down in Santa Barbara. And so I was just in his shop, and he was like, hey, do you need a job? I said, sure.
For crying out, really?
Yeah, literally. Really? I was pulling thread, and he was like, he's like, you designed that yourself? I go, yeah. And he was like, do you want a job? And I was like, okay. It literally was like, Peter's like amazing, his knowledge of stitching. He's won awards and so forth. He's a wonderful guy. So so I got the experience to work for him, and I started to discover like all these decorative stitches. He taught me so much. But I was so young that I tried to learn how to paint on canvas, and I was so frustrated. I was like, I don't get how these people are doing this. And so I just pushed it aside. But I think my education and development of understanding art history, interior design, how to paint, kind of created a big circle for me to land back here. And it just made sense for me in my time of life to start my design line. So I haven't been happier with the direction I've taken.
What was your mother stitching? Was it the standard basket weave flower baskets, or what was she doing?
Not even basket weave. She continental stitches back and forth. Yeah. Uh-huh. So, and my grandmother, my father's mother, Mel, she was an awesome stitcher, and she passed away when I was 5 years old, so I have very faint memories of her. But my mom always says, she's like, oh, your grandmother would be so proud of you if she saw what you're doing. And and I would say I'm a fairly good stitcher, so it's just it's kind of, and then we still have a bunch of my grandma's work that my mom hangs up in the house and so forth. So, you know, when I go and visit my parents, I just see it up on the wall, and it's just kind of fun. So
yeah. Got to keep those. Got to keep those. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm. Those stay in the family. Yeah.
Yeah. I told my mom, I was like, I get dibs on that.
Yeah, exactly.
Those things that are important to me.
So she's doing the old continental stitch and warping canvases, and you say, I got to learn how to do this, and then the art part of you just takes over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, I mean, anyone that knew me back in high school, if you gave me feathers, ribbons, a sewing machine, I'd figure out how to make a pillow, I mean, anything, hot glue, gun, I would just make frames. I mean, I was into everything.
Oh, you were that. You were that one in school.
Yeah.
Oh,
exactly. I hated every class except my art classes because it was just I thrived at it. So
That one in school. Yeah.
Yeah, that was me.
Everybody's got to put together a project, and then you walk in. So did you? So you started stitching in high school? Did you carry that through all these college travels?
I kind of went back and forth. I really would pick up stitching is when I'd have a niece or nephew born, and I would do name. I'd design with their name on it, and so I have another niece, little girl coming down the pipeline. So I'm like, oh, I need to start designing something for her. So that was really the only time throughout college that I was just so preoccupied with school and so forth. I just never felt like I had time.
Yeah. Have you ever actually purchased someone else's canvas or you just design your own?
No, okay. I actually have, but they were always on sale.
Oh, okay.
They're always on sale. Yeah, half off or something. It's an honest truth. So,
So now that you're doing painted canvases as much as you can, do you still stitch or are you like everyone else where it kind of gets shoved in the corner? And
it kind of rotates. Really, what I've been doing is stitching my own stuff. I'm sure you noticed on my website because you'd made note of it. One of my collections, the Halloween Street Signs, I have free stitch guides, and I stitched, put together the stitch guides myself. So like that kind of stuff, I do my own stitching. But some of the bigger projects, I'll use a stitching service like many designers do.
Yeah.
Just because it's more of a time frame for me. But really, like any of my designs, really my theory with designing is I'm only going to design something I'd want to stitch. So, a lot of times I'll design something. I'm like, oh, I just want to stitch that up right away and like have that beautiful piece. But
And I assume that you have a painting service for your canvases too?
I do. Yeah. I mix it up. I paint a lot of my stuff myself. And I do utilize them, especially around market. When I have to do, the cash and carry for like Dallas Destination, which is the market I go to. And then even post the market with all the orders, it's just physically impossible for me to, turn that product around. But usually like outside of that season, I'm painting stuff coming through. But I think I'm going to kind of start making a shift over to utilizing the painted service more, just as my business is continuing to grow. So I'm like, okay, I need to free myself up so I can really focus on more designs and marketing and so forth. So
I'm starting to conclude that the real business is being a painting service because every painted canvas designer eventually ends up. And usually very soon ends up using a painting service just because you just physically can't do it.
Yeah, And I enjoy the painting process. I really do. It just really comes down to demand and, customers want to get their canvases and start going away with it. So,
Yeah, in today's world of I want it now. Yeah, it'll be 3 weeks. Oh, geez, really?
Absolutely.
Yep. Yeah. So the I'm curious. I've never asked any other painted canvas designer, when you come up with a design, what is the mental process in terms of determining how big it's going to be? Is it just a feel, or do you?
It just depends on is it an ornament. So I kind of go off of is it 4 or 5 inches round? If it's square. That's kind of a rule of thumb on ornaments. Cause just imagine it up on a tree.
When you come up with a design, do you know immediately that it's ornament size you do.
Yeah.
Okay.
My design process is really like, okay, I'm going to do an ornament. I'm going to start with a 4-inch round and I want it to be, Santa's face. Well, I have to make sure it fits in that space. So I'm really working with what's my scale of inches and how much detail I can get in there. Do I want 13 mesh or 18 mesh? And then also a lot of stitchers turn to 18 mesh because they get more detail out of an ornament versus I have all my makeup bags. I only do my makeup bags on 13 mesh because I'm just thinking of how long it takes for a project and so forth to be stitched up. So, yeah, it's kind of my process. But, yeah, I just really start with what I'm designing. In my makeup bags, I researched, and I guess this is where, like, my experience of sewing comes in. I mean, I'm not a high-end sewer or anything, but I have knowledge and experience. And that's where understanding patterns and pattern making came in to help me develop my makeup bag. Because I'd done my research of different patterns where you can go online and just look up simple patterns. You can just find it if you Google anything. And so I just started working out like, okay, well, if it's makeup brushes, lipstick, what's my dimensions? And then I played with how it would be finished with fabric and I sewed it up to kind of mock it. And then I was like, okay, this works. So then I laid it out, my pattern, to go on the canvas. And then I've developed toiletry bags. I went through the exact same process to fit brushes and a flat iron and larger pieces that someone would utilize the bag for. So, yeah, it's kind of, I hope that's.
Yeah, and I assume like on a makeup bag that then instructions for finishing all come with it then.
I don't give any necessarily finishing, but a lot of the shops, they'll say, well, who finished your samples at market? And then I refer them off to the finisher.
Oh.
So that's really been my process. So, yeah, but I don't give actual instructions on there for them.
Yeah, because that looks like, it would take a bit of skill to finish that off because you got a flat, you got a flat bottom on them and you got to put a zipper in and.
Yeah, and I don't even know if I could totally explain it very well. So, with the finishers, you give them a picture and you're like, this is how it's supposed to turn out. This is what I want to look like. And then they're like, oh, okay, yeah, I know how to do that.
Yeah.
Sure, no problem.
Yeah, those people.
And I feel like a lot of people, I mean, I do see on social media where people say, oh, I finished this ornament myself, which is really rare to see. It seems like a lot of people turn to the finishing services. Just from my observation, but
yeah, that's an interesting hump for people to get over. And I haven't done it either. I turned to Vonna, Vonna here, you fix this thing. But, because that, and I've heard some people say, well, I sent it to a finisher because I'd rather take the time to stitch, which is an argument to be made. But then I think for a lot of people, it's just fear. I mean, for me, it's certainly that fear that I'm going to ruin all that stitching by doing something stupid. So,
give it
to somebody who actually knows what they're doing.
But then
when you watch the videos that people put out, it's like, well, I could do that. And how hard is that? But I don't know. I think what I need to do is just take a piece of blank canvas and make an ornament with a piece of blank canvas so that if it gets all messed up, I just throw it away.
And practice on it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Make my edge cord and, pour 8 pounds of glue on it and then glue it on and have it run all over and make that mess. And then maybe I wouldn't be so scared. But, the finishing aspect of this is interesting. I wonder if we did a little survey, how many people could just show pictures of stacks of stuff they finished that have never been made into anything, just sitting in a drawer.
I've heard of people where, because finishing is so expensive, that some people are like, well, I can only finish X amount at a time. So they kind of, some people are big time stitchers. So it's pretty amazing how fast.
Yeah, I'm always impressed and jealous of people that the way they crank stuff out, because I sat down. We're recording this on Labor Day, actually, and I sat down this afternoon to stitch and realized it had been 6 days since I'd had a chance to sit down and even look at it. And it's just, you got to be kidding me, because you can't get to it half the time. And then a lot of times in the evening, it'll be 9 or 9:30, and, I can stitch. And I think, and I'm going to fall asleep, and I'm going to have to tear out everything that I put in, so no, I'm not going to do it. And I've learned that lesson more than once, too. Come back to it the next time and say, who stitched this? Because it has nothing to do with what I'm doing.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Do you still get to stitch much, or are you...
Not as much as I wish I could. I did my son's stocking when he was 6 months old. And my daughter's now about to turn 2, and I have not started her stocking. So, and his, I designed it completely myself, painted it, stitched it, the whole, thing. And I know exactly what I want to do for my daughter. And I think after market, I'm going to focus on working on that and getting it done. So, I feel a little guilty about that, but, it's just been crazy. So with 2 toddlers and running the business from home and so forth. So,
I've told the story before, and I'll give you, I'll free you from the guilt.
Okay, good.
Cause I've done a stocking for my wife and our daughter, and those were done in a timely fashion. And then, one's needlepoint, the other's crewel.
Okay.
And then our son, I really wanted a good, a really high-end cross-stitch piece for him. Mm-hmm. So I got a cross-stitch canvas, and I was going to knock that out, and it was taking forever, and 28 years later, I finished it.
Oh, gosh. Wow.
So if you do it before she's 5... You're good.
Okay. Yeah, my husband told me the other day, I was like, I still haven't done that stocking. He goes, well, you know what the good thing is? She won't just really remember quite that much this Christmas, but you should have it done by next Christmas. I'm like, okay. They try and make me feel a little bit better.
Yeah, there's some room because the out is to go buy a store-bought one with her name on it, and then say, well, that's going to get replaced with the one I make.
But then
there's the ugly pressure. Usually starts about mid-October from the family.
Right.
Well, you're going to get it finished by this Christmas? and so then every year that question comes up at least once.
Right.
So you'll have to manage that. How many years do I want to hear it? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
But hey, it's the second kid. It happens to every second kid on the planet, I think. The baby book doesn't get done. The pictures don't get taken because you're chasing them around and trying to keep track of 2 of them. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Welcome to the club on that. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh, good.
Yeah. And our daughter has a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old, and the same thing's happening with the 1-year-old. Yep.
Yeah.
Same thing. It's standard. It's standard.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
You're fine. So this one thing that you in your designs that I thought was fun was this Paint My Name series.
Oh yeah.
Where'd that come from?
I was doing a lot of custom work for a shop in Alabama. We used to live down there, and now we're up in Indiana. When I was doing the custom work, a customer had put in an order, and I was like, well, that's a fun idea. Why don't I just add that to my line? So I just went and designed all the different letters of the alphabet and just thought, okay, well, any name could be done, and someone could get a feeling of a custom piece without paying the custom price. So that was kind of my I thought it was fun. I thought they're cute, just all the different names you can do. And you could pick colors that are primary colors, which could be for a boy or a girl, just depending, or go the pastels. With the pastels, I made it more kind of girlier designs versus the primary colors. I kind of switch it back up and forth because some of the letters, I'm trying to remember offhand, like S, I'll do like a sun, or why am I going blank?
Well, you got hippo
anyways,
for.
I have multiple designs for some of the letters.
You got hippo for H. Oh, so you would have a boy and a girl design then.
Or variation.
Yeah.
Some of the letters come off a little bit more masculine, and so I when I was in the design process, I was like, well, let me do a second letter available. It's a little bit more feminine because. Or like N for a nail. I mean, how many moms want a nail on their daughter's name. You know what I mean? But it would be more than appropriate for a boy, you know? So that was just kind of with a hammer and stuff. So mm-hmm. I kind of played around with that. But yeah, I really enjoyed putting together those designs. So
yeah, I'm stitching something for my daughter Nancy's bedroom, and so I want a nail for two of the ends. Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, pass.
Oh, that was right. I did nest, so like a bird's nest for the other end. There we go. Yeah,
good out.
Kind of blank. Yeah.
So on this, do I buy a canvas for each letter, or do I order it and then you just paint it all together as one?
Well, I'm exclusively only through shops, so you'd have to contact your shop. And just say, oh, I'm, you know, interested in this designer's name paint. And then you basically just work with the customer, and I price out per letter is how I do the pricing. And that just depends on how the shop does their markup. But I basically lay out the design on a computer program I use. And I send over the proof to the shop to say, show it to your customer so I get the green light. And then I do the painting process.
Oh, okay.
So I'll just build everything up off of that program. That's one lifesaver for me as a designer. Because when I first began laying out a design on canvas, and I'd be like, that's not right. And I'd have to so many layers of paint. It got just ugly. I was like, there's got to be an easier way. And then I discovered using the program. So just basically kind of like a graphic design for cross stitch. So that's been a huge lifesaver. So yeah.
No, it's just a really neat idea. And then I could have just the initials or the full name or mm-hmm. yep. or whatever it is. And the letters, all big block, solid blocks. You can choose a stitch mm-hmm. and develop that stitch throughout. And then just nice little simple details. Yeah. It's a great idea.
Yeah, and I do that on 18 count, that design. And so it also gives where you do those decorative stitches, they just show better.
Right.
Versus a 13 mesh. So,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it really is a great idea. I really like that one.
Yeah.
I don't have a need for it, but I like it.
Yeah, they're fun.
Yep. Yeah. That's great. When you stitch and paint, do you have a studio? Do you have a space? Or
yes.
Are you all over the house? Are you one of those, I'm everywhere?
Well, with my husband's career, it was always a yearly contract, so we lived in apartments. And so it got a little tight when the second one was born. So the dining room was my office. So that's how we lived. But now that we're in a house now, basically the kids playroom is / kids playroom, my office. And then we have a separate family room. So, cause I'm a stay at home mom. So when I work, it's when the kids nap and at night, like right now the kids are in bed asleep. So it's just how my schedule works. But I have a very great husband who's very flexible and, you know, so forth. So we're a good team. Yeah.
That's great. Yeah, Abby Glassenberg does a podcast that I listen to, and the title is While She Naps. And I never really got that. I said, well, where'd that name? And then it dawned on me one day. Oh, yeah.
That's it. Yeah, yeah. And my son, he just turned 4, and he's just one of those children that his nature is he just wants to be by his mama. Mm-hmm. And he's very independent. He'll play with his cars, have his snacks, and I'll be like, I need to paint right now. And he's like, okay, mama, no problem. But my daughter, she's like our little free spirit that it's like,
uh-oh.
And she's at that age too, that she's just like, if I'm sitting at my painting desk, she's like, I want up on your lap, like uppies, uppies, uppies. So it's just impossible. But, you know, I'm able to keep a really good balance, and I just love what I do. So working late at night, it doesn't feel like work for me. It's just because it's part of my passion of creating beautiful things. Yeah. So, yeah.
No, that's great. And, you know, and that's to keep this going. That's what you end up having to do is juggle. Mm-hmm. You got to juggle all those things. And
yeah. Yeah.
And if you have a husband who's supportive and is there, that makes a big difference. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So. Take this kid. I got to get this order done.
Yeah. There's sometimes I look at him and I'm like, you've got to help me. And he'll just take the kids out for the morning and all that stuff. So,
yeah.
Yeah. We make
there you
it
go.
Work,
so. That's what you need. Yeah.
Yeah.
So as you're doing these things and selling through shops, are you seeing trends? I mean, painted needlepoint seems to be thriving, certainly active and strong. Are you mm-hmm. seeing trends? I mean, do people want to do a lot of ornaments?
I don't know about. It's kind of hard as a designer because sometimes I feel like I'm shooting in the dark. Because I'm not in the shop interacting with the customers, hearing, oh, well, I don't like that, but I like these colors, or I wish it was this, you know, so I never really get that feedback.
Mm-hmm.
But really what for my line I've found is become a huge success, and I'm taking it and running with it, especially at market coming up in a couple weeks, are the makeup bags. I started out with about 7 or 8 designs, and I thought, well, you know, what woman, majority of stitchers are women, and what woman doesn't
yes,
like
I've
a
noticed.
Bag, right? It's very rare to meet men that stitch, honestly. It really is. So, but, you know, women like to wear makeup, or they know someone who likes to wear makeup, or they would use the bag to put their needle pointing tools in. That was just kind of my direction, and I hadn't seen much of anything like this in the marketplace, especially when I was at Dallas the year before. And so really as a designer, I like to kind of window shop around, and I'm never someone to be like, oh, she's doing that, I need to do that. I look at what someone else is doing. I say, okay, they're doing that, I need to stay away from it because I need to look at what is not happening in the marketplace. That's how I also work for myself of inspiration in a way to try to be creative and think outside of the box. And so I went out with the makeup bags and I just did awesome at market last year. And so I'm coming back pretty strong with over 20 new makeup bag designs, and I'm introducing 2 new shapes. So that's kind of really the strength of my line has come through, and also my street sign collections. Those are just really fun ornaments with the different either Halloween or Christmas or Easter. And then in the spring market, I'm going to introduce Thanksgiving and probably Valentine's too. But I just decided to focus on this market on the makeup bags and just bring in, you know, fun designs that people really when I do my designing, I want people to have that emotional reaction, because in the needlepoint world, when someone walks into the shop, it's not like, oh, I have to have that because, you know, like, oh, my dishwasher went out, I have to have a new dishwasher. It's a, I want that needlepoint because I enjoy it. And so they really have to have like that emotional connection to the piece. If it reminds them of something, or reminds them of a place they visited, or I don't know, like a quote they love, that's like a Marilyn Monroe or Audrey Hepburn or something like that, that kind of takes them to a happy place. That's also how I like to work on my designs, because it takes me to a happy place too. Like anything girly and feminine, I've always loved. That's just kind of who I've always been. So, that's kind of that process.
Well, and I think for the younger people to have something to show, like makeup bags and you know, those kinds of things, you know, to something you use every day or use frequently and take mm-hmm. it out and your friends go, where'd you get that? Well, I made it.
Yeah. And these makeup bags, I say makeup bags, but they're even people using them as an evening bag to wear as a clutch to go out for dinner.
Uh-huh.
So that's also another thing that I've noticed too, that some customers out there have said to me on like Instagram or so forth that will message me like, oh, hey, I finished this, and send me pictures, which is fun. So I love seeing when what colors people pick and so forth to make it their own. I always love seeing my designs stitched up by other people. So
yeah, that has to be almost the ultimate reward, is that somebody actually bought this, but then they did something with it and they got creative. Yes.
Uh-huh. I get a kick out of it for sure.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Do you get, I would think at some point that would give you some inspiration for other things when you see colors or stitches that they use, and maybe another in the line, another addition in the line because of something you saw someone do?
Or just seeing what items of mine are selling and what shops are coming back to say, I already sold out of those makeups, I need more.
Yeah.
And so when I see those kind of reactions to like, okay, well, they're not really reacting to this design, but they're really liking the ones that have Audrey Hepburn quotes. Okay, let me take that and kind of build on it to bring the customers something else that they'd say, oh, I did that one. Oh, I have to do this makeup bag. So, you know.
Yeah, I've not. It amazes me the quotes and the words. They really mm-hmm. seem to be popular. And mm-hmm. a couple, 3 weeks ago when we talked with Shayna, she was doing a lot of quotes and words, and I guess that's younger people tend to like to do that. I mean, they got to be pretty quick stitches, I would think.
Yeah, Shayna and I have become friends. I just messaged her on Instagram and we started chatting, and I realized, oh, she's a young designer like me and has just been starting out and stuff like that. So we've actually kind of developed a friendship. I love her stuff because it's just bold, blocky letters making a statement. And you can have so much fun with that, with your stitches. And I know she likes to do the 18 mesh and stuff. And so that's what, you know, and it also when you're looking at what's happening in social media, if it's Pinterest or whatever, you really see that that's what's floating around for home decor. And I think, too, as an interior designer, that's where I run through my mind is see what's happening in that interior design and fashion marketplace. Mm-hmm. It always reflects back into the home because that's what all this needlepoint stuff is. If it's a pillow that someone's going to put in a room, it all correlates back to what colors are popular in the marketplace. And it's just how our culture works, that what's trending at that moment. You know, kind of like the 90s plaid was huge, you know, and kind of the grunge and this and mm-hmm. that. And then, you know, as each generation goes through. Right now it's just, you see the signs that say like home or market or to put as decor up on walls, fresh eggs or, you know what I mean? The kind right. of farmhouse kind of style with the big signs. So, I definitely can see, you know, where she goes in that direction with the bold letters and the sayings. It's just, you know,
They're just popular. That kind of design is just popular from several designers, mm-hmm. and everybody yeah. has mm-hmm. everybody has their own take and their own way of either a line of sayings or just their own words. But it's interesting to see how many variations come out of like fresh eggs. There's right. you know, a million different designs, needlepoint and cross stitch for those kinds of things. And
mm-hmm. And people can be very tongue in cheek.
Yes. Yes.
And have fun with the letters. And either some people just, I mean, if it's using naughty words, as my mother would say, but either people love it or they hate it. But there's always like a marketplace for these people where they're like, gosh, I haven't seen anything like that. Like, thank you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's definitely one of those things that you could take that in lots of different directions. But, I enjoy the makeup bags, just having fun sayings. Like, I have a flamingo design that's new, and it says, you totally look flamazing. So it's just kind of cute little fun right. little blurbs right. to kind of – you know, dress it up a little more, I guess. Yeah.
Well, and your interior design background has got to be a huge help for you when it comes to that kind of thing.
Yeah. And just understanding a lot of color. A lot of it, just so much of my experience between taking basic design classes all the way into how a room is built up with color on the wall, all of that training has helped me with my design process of having a balance of having cool and warm colors or, you know, so something will pop out better. And also the experience of working with different threads and kind of getting an idea of, okay, well, this color will pop better off of that. Cause I have to also think as a stitcher, as a painter too, of how something will, if it got stitched up completely in basket weave, well, will that read okay, those letters on there? Or do I need to add in extra painted threads to make the letters thicker? So you kind of have to, I think it's a little experience too that I've found through that design process compared to my very early pieces that I did. So
that stay in a drawer.
Yeah, some of them have. So, yeah.
So do you have a sense of not only color but stitches that might make it work then?
Yeah. While I was designing, which again these won't be released till the spring, the Thanksgiving harvest street sign collections or collection. When I was designing that, I literally had books out of different stitches. And I was like, oh, that'd be a great stitch for this background. Okay, keep that a real simple background. So when I do the free stitch guide, you know, I in that design process, I was thinking of that as well.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So you're effective. So for you to offer a free stitch guide, you've done the work as part of the design process. So the stitch guide is really just a matter of putting on paper what you were doing then.
Yeah, especially with this new collection, I've kind of switched my mindset. It just really depends what I'm working on. And, it, you know, for the stitch guides, I was already in the mindset, oh, yeah, I am going to do this. So I already had it in my thought process in designing versus the Christmas, Easter, and Halloween. I already just designed those. And then it was a later afterthought where I was like, gosh, I should do some free stitch guides. That would just be a fun tool for shops.
Sure.
I think customers would appreciate it. It will get customers into learning some decorative stitches that they were, you know, some of these stitch guides can be really expensive. So for me as a designer, I just thought it was like a fun thing to put my energy into to help the shops, the customers, and then people being like, oh, how neat. Kimberly Ann does that. What a great little bonus.
Yes.
So that was just kind of my, it's a lot of work to put them together. So I understand why people charge for them. I absolutely understand that and respect that. And especially some people that are extremely skilled at it. Mine are very like basic, simple, introductory, decorative stitches. But yeah, so there's definitely different levels of, you know, the different stitchers out there and the right. Very trained professionals.
People just basically, if they buy your canvas, then they just go like this whole Halloween sign series. It's, there's a stitch guide for everything. So they just go and download that off your site. So it's,
yep, just a PDF. So no shop would feel like, oh, well, I have to print them up. Well, that costs me money and time to print this. And for what I'm actually starting to do is put stickers on the canvas that say free stitch guide. Onto the canvas. Mm-hmm. So it really takes the weight off of the shops, you know, because they get so busy. They might not remember, oh, yeah, she has those free stitch guides she told me about, you know.
Right.
So I'm trying to kind of make it easier and on both sides. And then people could go to the website and they just click on that PDF and it loads up on their computer. They could have it on their tablet if they don't want to print it out, or they could print it. So, yeah.
Oh no, I think it's a great idea, especially for little ornaments, because that's, you know, people buy those and then I wonder how many get bought and then they go, oh, now I got to figure out what stitches. And really it's something that should be a quick stitch and make into an ornament. And so you've gotten them past that. Here's
right.
What you can do. This will work. This is how it will look. Stitch it up.
Actually, all the threads that I've used are Rainbow Gallery. So I've teamed up with them a little bit. So Sally, the manager over there, she's been really great. Just kind of working with me on some threads for those. And then also I'll use Sundance, their beads and so forth. So it's just, it gives me experience to some of the new threads that I hadn't worked with Rainbow Gallery too, which I'm experiencing right now with the Thanksgiving ones that I have started working on. So yeah,
they have a slight variety there.
Mm-hmm. A huge variety. It's amazing. Yeah.
Yep. Okay. So, all right. I can imagine if someone was strictly painting canvases, what the workspace would look like. And it's pretty easy to imagine someone who stitches a lot. You must have, your workspace must be a huge collection of both. Like paints and everything one side and threads and canvas everywhere else.
Yeah. Basically, I have drawers full of paint. But I kind of get zoned in on the paints I like and the colors. Because a lot, if you look at, especially my makeup bags, I have common colors running through because it's just what I gravitate to. That, mm-hmm. And I see colors, certain colors are popular in the market. But yeah, so I have drawers full of my inventory, stuff I'm working on. I have rolls I'm looking at right now, rolls of canvas in the corner. And then I have a closet full in the guest bedroom upstairs of threads and just samples and production and so forth. And then bins full for market, you know, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's been nice to be in a bigger house and out of an apartment. So
I can't even imagine doing that in an apartment. Oh
yeah. Once my daughter was born, my husband and I just looked at each other and we're like, oh my gosh, yep. Like, this is crazy. So, but we survived. We made it.
We need a house.
It was just hard with his career that he was year to year on contract. So we just said, no, are we staying here? He's an assistant professor. He was a postdoc at that point. And so we were just waiting until the next step was available for us. So,
Yeah, you got to stay mobile, so because you never know. Oh, geez. But I need a place to store canvas, a lot of it.
Yeah, there's times I'd get in trouble where my husband's like, what are you rat packing in here? Like, what is all this? I'm like, sorry.
I can't help it. So what, you do trunk shows too, and that's got to be a constant scheduling and shipping issue.
Yeah, well, I like to keep them where I only have one trunk show a month, but I've made the exception to do a couple. This year I did that, and it does get a little crazy, but, you know, it really comes down to keeping an eye on my inventory because I don't want to, you know, ship just the skeleton of a show to a shop.
Right.
So that's really what it comes down to me is more managing my inventory and making sure I'll be ready for those shows. So like when I get back from market, I have to ship out a trunk show 2 days later. So it just kind of, it doesn't seem, I think I've kind of gotten it down now, my process, and I have a checklist, and it's kind of, at first it was a little overwhelming, but, now I feel like I got it down pretty good. Yeah. It doesn't seem too bad. And I kind of like to think of my line is, more of a boutique line. I don't know. I mean, I will continue to design and continue to expand, but I don't ever want to feel like my line is so all over the place. I really want to feel more like a boutique when someone comes in for market. Because some of these designers, they have such amazing stuff. But I even look, I'm like, where do they store all this stuff when they show up where they have three rooms? I'm like, that just seems so overwhelming to me that I never want, for myself personally, to take away from my time of designing and enjoying that process and being bogged down by so much inventory and tracking it. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see as I grow, you know, I learn, okay, I need to adjust this and how I'm doing it. But, you know, at this point, I'm just looking at myself kind of more boutique-y, like a simple shop you walk into and things are real clear and organized. Yeah. So
I'm sure the people who have a broad line of various things and then people who start repping other designers, I'm sure that's just an evolution that happens. You know, it's not like they sat down to do it. You know, this is how I'm going to do it. No, it just, it just happens.
And I think that's what's happening. It's a lot of these, they're repping other designers. So that makes sense that's really maybe more what they're focused in on. Is managing the designers, those designs and so forth. So,
right.
But yeah, to each their own and whichever process that works for them. So, yeah.
And then those trunk shows must be an excellent market feedback tool for you.
It really is actually. After this year of doing the trunk shows, it gives me feedback that I'm like, you know, I'm going to discontinue a couple of my collections because the numbers aren't there and, why waste my time with that inventory, even worry about it. So, you know, I've definitely focused on that. That's actually a good point. It gives me huge feedback that otherwise I don't get. And shops love, especially with a new designer coming in, they love picking up a trunk show with a new designer because it gives them a taste of, what their customers are going to like from that designer.
Sure.
Either they, you know, so they're not spending money on that inventory, and then they're like, oh, I have to clearance it out because it didn't sell.
Right.
And I understand that and respect that. And for me, the trunk shows are awesome every month to be like, great, I get this big check coming in. Sweet. You know, I think each of us win for a shop owner and a designer. And the customers win too, because they get access to all those designs, and the shops like to do a special discount and so forth. So,
Well, and that, you know, that's something I think that gets overlooked is in the feedback. Yeah, you find out what's successful, but if you stop and think about it, you also find out what designs you just need to quit spending time on. And, yeah, dump them and move on. And
Exactly.
Because I'm sure you have a list of designs a mile long that you want to get to, so. So is that, do you go through the days and everything you look at gets evaluated? Could it be a design?
Do you, when
you look at, you know, a basket of flowers or going through a store, do you see designs all over the place?
Right. Yes, absolutely. I can't, my husband laughs at me. He's like, you can't turn that design brain off. I go, no, as a designer or artist, my mom paints too. And it's just like, we'll look at each other and be like, gosh, that'd be a great painting. Wouldn't that, you know? So I actually have been kind of telling my mom's been really busy lately, but I was like, mom, you've got to like put some designs together, and we need to do some needle pointed canvases to sell at market for, you know, I guess I could have her as a designer I manage, but
yeah, there's you your know. First there's yeah, your no, first designer to rep. See, you see how this happens? You see what happens?
Yeah, there it is. We talked about it because she's really talented. But yeah, absolutely. I could just be driving down the street and I see something, or going through Hobby Lobby and I'm like, gosh, that'd be really cute on a makeup bag. I could see people liking that. And then, you know, I'll just make a mental note or like write it. Or I like to try to keep a small sketchbook with me that fits in my purse to kind of jot that down. So, it's true.
So do you drag your mom into the business from time to time?
My mom is always at the market. She's my support system. 100%. And she's involved in the design process that I'll be working on stuff. And I'll be like, do you like this? Should I tweak this? Which one do you like better? I have three different options. And so she gives me a lot of feedback in many ways. So she's also a great cheerleader too. And then my father, he's always owned a small business. So on the business side, he's been a huge help for me on, you know, how to go forward with my inventory and all that kind of stuff. So, in just setting up my business as well. So,
well, you have an excellent support system. Good for you.
Yeah. It's been really great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then my mother-in-law's always helped and help watch the kids while I'm at market. So I have a great support system.
It's very fortunate. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, all right. What do we have new at market? You got a whole list of new things, or?
Yeah, so like I mentioned earlier, over 20 some odd new makeup bags. And on Instagram, I've been slowly sneak peeking them out to people. I thought I'd just have kind of fun with it and do like a countdown to market. And then just give them shops also an idea of what I'll have there too, to kind of build some excitement. And then, like I mentioned earlier, I'm introducing the toiletry bag. And a makeup brush bag that rolls up, so someone could put their brushes on the inside. It has a zipper for finishing that they could do. So I'll have that sample at market to show. And then I'm trying to think what else. It's really just makeup bags. It's 100% makeup bags I'm bringing to market. Yeah, and then I signed up for the spring. There's a new spring needlepoint market that will be in Orlando, Florida. So I signed up for that. So I'm kind of already forecasting what I want to do for that show. So I'm pretty excited. It sounds like it's going to be similar to Dallas, same kind of setup. Mm-hmm. So it's its first, very first time. So I'm excited about that too.
Yeah, I think that's something that Stitchers should explore more. Is even though they cannot buy from you directly, they have to buy through the store to follow your site and to follow you on Instagram. to see mm-hmm. what designs are coming up and then go to your store and say, hey, I want this.
Exactly. And that's what, for me as a business, social media has been huge. As a small designer coming out, that has been the number one thing to help my business grow, hands down. And especially Instagram. I'm on Facebook, and all my Instagram gets filtered into my Facebook page, but I love the setup of Instagram, how you just do your hashtag and a lot of people can discover you. I've gotten new accounts. I've had customers go into their shops and be like, who's this designer? And then the shop's like, I don't know. And then they see my stuff and I get a big sale. So it's been a huge instrument for me because I think a lot of customers want to feel connected to what the designers are doing.
Sure.
Like they want to be like kind of on the inside, especially these people with such a huge hobby that they enjoy it because it's like a subculture within itself. And so I want to try to, through Instagram, create that experience for them to kind of be like, oh, here's my painting desk. It's clean right now. Can you believe it? And like, just kind of fun little things. And I really want to try to get a little more time where I'm putting out there like, oh, here's a fun stitch and stuff like that. That's one of my intentions to put out some more information than just like, oh, hey, here's a new design, but also just more information that people could utilize in general. So, but yeah, it's been really good.
Yeah. Instagram really seems to be emerging as kind of the go-to tool, particularly with Instagram TV or whatever it is, where you can put up little videos.
Right.
And, I see more and more people using that more aggressively, I guess is the word I would use, to show what they're doing, show what, you know, what's coming up. And like you said, yeah, just to keep people up to date and keep connected with them. And it is a quick way to put something up and at least be visible all the time.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yep.
Yep.
It's been great.
Good stuff. All right, so at market is the Dallas market is 2 weeks.
Yes, I'm at just under 2 weeks. It's the 15th.
Okay,
that Saturday. Yeah,
so that means that this will people hear about this about the same time as the market. So that'll be timed perfectly.
Oh, okay.
And we didn't even plan it that way. Think about
that. Who knew?
You know.
If
I hadn't admitted that, people would think we were really professional here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, but no, just dumb luck. All right, Kimberly, this has been a blast. Thank you.
It's always
fun to get to see inside of a design operation. So
absolutely.
Yep. So look for Kimberly's designs and links to her website and Facebook and Instagram. All on the page for this podcast for those people who are looking for that. And yeah, follow her at Instagram. See what those new designs are at the market. And go order a couple. Why not? I'm not going to be buying one of your makeup bags, though. Sorry.
Well, it could be a gift for someone else. Just think.
Yeah. All right. I'll think along those lines. Yes. Okay. I will. All right, Kimberly, thanks so much for doing this with us and sharing your business and what you're doing. And thanks to everybody for listening. And Christine and I will be back on Wednesday.